Say good morning to his honor, the Racine Mayor, Corey Mason. Thank you for being here, my...
My pleasure.
My mayor. All right, now, let's get right down to business here. No,
no.
Let's first talk about our sister city, our brand new sister city.
Yeah. So we have a few sister cities, but our newest one, the council just passed a resolution at the last council meeting to make Brantford, Ontario, our next sister city. This came about, I'm part of the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Cities Initiatives, and we were at the conference... earlier this year, and just talking to a number of mayors, you know, strangely, just given the national politics right now, Canada, which is usually our friendliest and, you know, longest neighbor, has some tensions right now, just what's going on in the news. And so the decision was made at this conference that, hey, maybe we should, you know, create some sister city relationships between Canadian Great Lakes cities and American Great Lakes cities. And so I happened to bump into the mayor of Brantford, Ontario, literally on an elevator. And I think by the time we got to the floor that we're doing on, we decided, well, let's become sister cities. The thing that we have in common the most, obviously, is the SCJ footprint. Obviously, SCJ is based here, but their Canadian headquarters is in Brantford, Ontario. But they're also a city near the Great Lakes. And
by the way, for people who can't put that together, S.C. Johnson.
Yes, S.C. Johnson. Company. Sorry, yes, for those who don't. But that's where they've been for years. And you know, they're a town of about 100,000 people and have sort of similar demographics. And, you know, they're about 70 miles from Toronto, and, you know, we're about 70 miles from Chicago. So a lot in common and a common love for the Great Lakes. So our council has passed the resolution, and we anticipate that their council will do so in turn, and then we'll have our next sister city.
So that summit was done on an elevator.
It was.
The elevator summit.
It was. People say you got to have an elevator speech to get something. That was the elevator speech about why Brantford and Racine should be.
A lot of people don't talk on an elevator. Yeah. They're quiet. They face forward and keep their mouth shut. But not you. Good for you. Okay. What is the benefit to being a sister city?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we have another sister city that's actually visiting now. This is Owiso, Japan. So there's some high school students from Owiso that are visiting right now for a couple weeks. The purpose behind it was started after World War II. And it was really with the idea of Japan and Germany had gone to war three times in the course of about 80 or 90 years. And the sister city program was put together, the idea being maybe if people in cities of neighboring countries got to know each other personally and visited each other and had exchanges with each other, there would be less of a chance of future wars. And so that's the premise behind it. And so not surprisingly, there's more sister cities between France and Germany than any other two countries. But the city of Racine has a sister city in Aalborg, Denmark. We have a sister city in...
Oh, I didn't know the Denmark one.
Yeah. Montelimar, France is our longest one. That was set up in 1947, shortly after World War II. We have one in Mexico and one in Owiso, Japan, and now Brantford, Ontario. So we're excited to do the exchanges with them. And, you know, just given the mood with tariffs and some of the other national discussions going on right now, it's been helpful at a sister city level to still reach out to our friends in other cities and saying, hey, somebody else might be talking about invading Greenland, but it's not us here at the local level, reaching out to the folks in Denmark and making it clear that we want to have good lines of communication and diplomacy at a city to city level. And it's a great culture exchange, right? It's been great for our young people to be able to go to some of these sister cities and for their young people to visit us and visit the region. So it's been very positive.
I still like dull and boring as sister cities. I think that was fantastic. They came up with that. All right, let's talk about Clean Sweep.
Yeah, so this is the first one that we did. I learned about it at another conference I was at with a group of mayors that were meeting with the Bloomberg Cities Initiatives. But the idea was, hey, you pick like four blocks in the neighborhood that could use a little bit of love in the public domain and help clean it up a little bit. So this is everything from replacing sidewalk squares to, you know, trimming overgrown bushes to replacing the garbage bins if they need to be replaced to, you know, patching up potholes. So, you know, we get everybody from DPW and the Parks Department and the fire departments there. The fire department went, knocked on every door and installed smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors in the homes. And it was just us being there for two full days, cleaning up the neighborhood, replacing fences and mending fences, literally in some of these yards. And, you know, in a couple yards, you know, they get these bushes that are, you know, way overgrown. You can't even see the house anymore. Sometimes it's an elderly person who might live there. And so we're able to trim those back. And, you know, the fire department pointed out it's really important from a fire safety perspective, if the tree or bushes have gotten so overgrown, they can't even see the windows on the second floor.
Or the house number.
Yeah, yeah. So all those things become... So it was a big success. We had about 80 city employees that spent the 2 days down there doing various cleanup. The neighbors were thrilled, and it's a project. We will do one more of them this year. It's a pilot project, but it's we'll do another one in October. And I think it's been successful enough that we will make it something that we do every year.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something about the health center.
Yes.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So the couple.
Really, do you want to take a drink of water?
Yes, please.
Every time he reaches forward, he's got to put the cap back on.
So, all right, go ahead. Yeah. So a couple really exciting things going on with the community center health clinic. Number one, the new one that's being built, it'll be done, late next year, but it's going vertical, right? So they spent all this time digging a big hole and putting the basement in, but you know, you look at it and it's like, oh, it's a hole in the ground, right? But now it's actually going vertical and you can see the skeleton of the building is going up. And so that's really exciting. But as exciting, you know, the idea is that this is gonna be a federally qualified health clinic, but to do that, you need an FQHC provider to do that.
Now, what is that?
The federally qualified health clinic is what will go into the health clinic, but it is a federally subsidized clinic for people who have no or underinsured or have no insurance, and they can go in, you know, for $20 or $30 and see a physician or a dentist or get mental health care. And so most communities have these. We're the biggest city in the Midwest that doesn't have one until now. So Pillar Health, which runs an FQHC in Kenosha and Walworth County, and now Racine County, has opened up in Julian Thomas School at the garden level. That's always been the plan. This was going to be sort of the temporary space that they would do to sort of establish themselves in the neighborhood while we're building the larger clinic. And so they opened just last week and are open from 7 to 4, Monday through Friday. And so if people need to see a physician or a nurse practitioner, they have people available to do that.
I don't want to sound old, but I'm going to sound old here. When I was a little kid, Dr. Thierman was my doctor. And my mother took me to the doctor for something. I don't know what it was. But we walk in, and there were mothers screaming at the receptionist. When we walk in, what is going on? They raised the price from $4 a visit to $6.
Yeah.
And the mothers were irate that it was up $2 when they counted on $4. Could you imagine paying $4, even $6 for
a
great visit?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think.
And then nobody used insurance. You just opened your wallet. You gave her $6.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I think that's the challenge is healthcare has just gotten so expensive for people. And especially as these cuts are coming down from the federal government, all the more reason we need a facility like this for people who might be uninsured or underinsured to be able to go there.
Now, here's something I have a problem explaining to people because I think I understand it. The difference between Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare is you put into Medicare when you reach a certain age.
Yeah, when you're 65.
65, yeah. Or, yeah, you can get medical care through Medicare or one of the, what do they call those, like the Medicare providers.
The Medicare Advantage.
The Advantage plans, yeah, which are pretty good. Medicaid is a state-run plan for people based on income, not age, right?
Right. So it's a federally mandated program that are run by the states, and it's for people who are in poverty, right? Now, just to confuse it even further, though, however, if you're elderly and in poverty, you might also be using Medicaid, not Medicare, particularly.
Now, why would that be?
I mean, that's just the rules as the federal government has set it up. But if you're going into a nursing home and the federal government's going to pay for that, that is going to come from Medicaid, not from Medicare. So Medicare is more to see your doctor on an ongoing basis, or if you have surgery or something like that. But if it's a long-term home health care position that you're in, or you need to be in a nursing home, it's Medicaid that would cover that if you income qualify.
I once asked my mother, who is a real smart person, I said, what did they do before insurance in Medicare? What did they do? I said, they died.
Yeah. I mean, life expectancy was much shorter.
You didn't go to the doctor, you died.
Right.
That was it. You didn't have the money. Whoa.
Yeah. People forget just how acute it was when we didn't have Medicare and Medicaid to fill in those gaps.
I once asked her too, in cities like New York, you always see these old pictures around the turn of the century, 1900, people wearing these long woolen dresses, long woolen coats, the guys wearing these heavy jackets in the middle of summer when it's like 90 degrees outside. You see the pictures, they're all dressed up. I said, there was no air conditioning. What did they do?
Yeah.
And she goes, when it got too hot, they died. And she's right.
Or they could take the coat off if it's 90 degrees.
Well, even then, if you go into your apartment, and it's in cities like New York, I'm talking about, you go into your apartment, what do you do?
Yeah.
I mean, it's too hot.
Yeah, oppressively hot.
You died from the heat.
Yeah.
That's scary. Thank goodness we live where we live now.
We do. We do. And if you're in a place where you don't have that, when it is hot.
Yeah, let's talk about that. There are cooling places.
We do have community centers that serve as cooling places. So if you're, you know, encountering that, if your air conditioning's broken, or if you've got a neighbor who's elderly who might not have air conditioning, you can take them over to the community center, you know, and cool off for a little bit and just enjoy some cooler air. And, you know, we don't want people to get so warm that they have a medical event. So we do have cooling centers.
When I was a kid, I hate to sound old again, but on a real, before we had air conditioning in our house, my dad used to say, it's hot, we're going to a movie, let's go. Because the movie theaters were air-conditioned. They even had that sign out front with icicles hanging from it, air-conditioned.
Yeah.
And it was a hot day. We're going to the movies, so let's go.
Yeah.
We didn't care what movie it was.
The other thing that's there, if you're able-bodied, I mean, I just remind everybody, Lake Michigan is always a relief from the heat.
Thank you, Vic.
North Beach, it's free, show up.
No tsunamis, nothing like that.
That's right. No tsunamis here.
His Honor, Mayor Corey Mason is here, City of Racine Mayor. You have any, want to be governor?
No, thank you.
I asked everybody that. Nobody wants to be governor.
Yeah, I think there are several people who are going to run for governor. I will not be one of the people running for governor.
Hey, it's open.
It is. I appreciate people asking. But
you get free room and board.
It's true. You get the governor's residence.
I was amazed the other day we were talking that the president of the United States gets a place to sleep at night free.
Right.
Everything else you have to pay for. Food.
Really?
Toiletries. Yeah, you got to pay for everything.
Wow.
If you have guests coming over, you got to pay for the state dinners out of your pocket. If you've got, anything going on there, you got guests sleeping, you got to pay for that stuff.
Wow.
He only gets the room, and that's it. Everything else is on his tab. I never knew that before.
I never heard that either.
Yeah, well, that's true. You heard it here first. Okay. Let's talk about the YMCA. Is it all gone?
It is.
It is. And you were the first one to put a knock hole in it.
That's right. They actually used the backhoe to swing
first out. First one to knock a brick out of it.
Yeah.
So now the next step is you got to clean up the site.
You got to clean up the site and stabilize the bluff. That's what's next. But it certainly makes it an exciting redevelopment opportunity. So we're
open to... Any clues to what's going to be there?
I mean, I'm guessing it'll be another mixed-use sort of space, right? I mean, imagine it's great views, right? I mean, so there's always hope that you'd be able to put some sort of apartment building or condo.
Now, how many more apartments? We got the Breakwater.
Yeah.
They've been refurbishing the Main Street, Main and State building there. Yeah. They've been working on that for about months and months and months. We have those two.
You have Bell City Square that's doing well, the old Horlicks site on Northwestern.
Okay,
there.
Yeah.
And they're doing great. And so,
we need more apartments?
We do. You know, we just, here's a breaking news for you. We just did a market study that we'll be talking about soon, but it basically said, you know, the city of Racine could build another 1,500 housing units in the next 5 years and not break a sweat. So
really?
Yeah. So there is definitely a need for housing in the city, in the greater Racine area. It is a challenge that we're contending with, is just trying to figure out how to do more housing. It's difficult because money's gotten more expensive and the prices of building new houses has gotten more expensive, but there's definitely a need for housing. And the reality is, if you don't build new housing, other communities will, and that's where people will live if we're not.
But this is the housing. Like, I don't know how much the Breakwater charges, but I don't think it's cheap housing.
I mean, it's market rate housing, right? Okay. It's not income adjusted housing.
How about that big high rise right there on the lakefront that's been there for years?
High rise on the lake.
Yeah, I can't think of it. Oh, it's right opposite to the north of Festival Hall, Festival Park.
Oh, the condos that are there.
Yeah.
Those are still condos. They're still doing well.
I think Oprah Winfrey's relatives.
I remember years ago.
The Oprah story?
Yes. Supposedly she had a condo or a relative with a condo there. I don't think that's still the case. But, those are still full and sold out. I mean, the condo market The condo market is nobody wants to build condos. There's certainly people that want to buy condos, but finding people to build them is very difficult.
I mentioned this to you before we went on the air. The city of Atlanta ran into a problem the other day. Waymo has these driverless cars now, and I've seen them in different cities.
Yeah.
It picks you up, you get in the passenger or the back seat, and the car drives with no driver.
Yeah.
So one had to be stopped, and the policeman didn't know who to write the citation to. You can't write it to the passenger. He wasn't driving.
Right.
You can't write it to the person who owns the car. They weren't driving. And they don't know who to write the citations to. And this is a problem that never existed before until recently.
Right. It's a great legal question. What happens if the driverless car runs a stoplight?
What happens if the driverless car hits somebody?
Yeah. Who do you hold responsible. We're not quite there in Racine to be able to do that. We have one autonomous vehicle called the Badger that we work with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that we work with the UW-Madison Engineering Department and Gateway. It's sort of a joint project. You might see it down the parade route when we do the 4th of July parade. In Wisconsin, though, even if you have a driverless car, the rule is somebody's still got to be sitting in the driver's seat just in case. So we're not to a point yet where we'll have to confront that. But more and more communities are seeing driverless cars and autonomous vehicles come into play.
I can't imagine my reaction pulling up to a stoplight and looking over and no one's there.
Yeah.
That's got to be scary.
Yeah, it'll be different. I mean, who knows if this is 5 years away or 20 years away, but, you know, it is coming.
Okay. Racine, pretty big city. Third biggest in Wisconsin? Fifth biggest.
Yeah.
Oh, when did we drop down?
Yeah, we're behind Kenosha and Green Bay now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
A while ago. But, okay. I mean, Kenosha keeps growing geographically and can add people, and we are landlocked. So the region continues to see population growth, but the city itself is landlocked. Yeah. So we're fifth in size.
We're top 10 on the charts.
That's right.
Okay. So what are we doing right? Everybody, you know, you live in a city, you take it for granted that everything's working right. There are cities where it's not working right. What are we doing right?
Oh, there's lots of great things to comment on what we're doing. I think right now we're in the middle of this youth employment program that we do every summer, and we've been doing it for the last 4 years. But we take, you know, 60 young kids aged 16 to 24, and we give them internships in city departments, all the city departments. We've got a cadet program with the police department and the fire department that they can do for 8 weeks. But we place people at the water utility or DPW if they might want to be an engineer or what have you. And it's a great experience. It provides additional resources for the city to get some work done, but it also does this great thing where, you know, when jobs open up in those departments and we're thinking about, well, who could we get who might want to work for the wastewater utility, for example? And it gives the utility the opportunity to say, you know, we had an intern last summer and we really liked him or her. And so it allows us to create an employment, like sort of apprenticeship program for the kids. And then it also lets them do some positive things. So all of them were there to help out with the clean sweep program. They learn about financial literacy while they're doing the program. But it exposes young people in this community to careers that they might want to have, whether it's in public safety or DPW or forestry or you name it. And, you know, as we're working really hard to try to get more of our employees to be city residents, it's a great opportunity for young kids, and they're doing great. We get great feedback from all the department heads saying, boy, I just wish we could keep them longer. So it's a great program.